Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good, and I just want to add something before you go on rambling, before you go on.
Rambling? I'm not a rambler. I'm specific and to the point. I have to nail it. Come on.
You sound like you go, real quick. I'm sorry. I'm just all worked
true.
Up today.
It's very clear.
And I think the theme of this podcast is clueless tenacity. Brian's book, The Dropout, he's got a saying in there. It's the ability to take an opportunity or idea and run with it when you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. That sounds like Jake and Gino around 2011, and it's till today, and it's probably going to continue for the rest of my life. So the theme is clueless tenacity, Jake.
Gino, ask me how I'm doing.
How you doing, brother?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest has over 35 years of experience in sales. His upcoming book, No, The Psychology of Sales and Negotiation, offers 40 lessons and valuable skills from a street smart negotiator and visionary and business leader. So without further ado, Brian Will, welcome to the show.
Jake and Gino, thanks for having me, man. You guys are a trip. This is going to be fun.
Hey, it is our pleasure, okay? I want you to know that. It's our pleasure. What you got, Gino?
I was going to say, Jake, you were so eloquent there. You did not ramble. My excuse, please. My apologies, brother. Sorry about that.
All right, we're going to get serious here. Brian, let's get to know each other a little bit better. Share with us your background and how you got started in business.
You know, I'm the most unconventionally educated guy you've probably ever had on your show. So starts with failing out of high school at 16. Managed to get back in and graduate with a 1.2 GPA, kicked out of the house at 18, had to join the military, got off active duty, couldn't hold a job. I got fired as a waiter. I worked a 12-hour shift as a waiter. If you've ever worked in the service industry, after 12 hours, I owed them $6. I don't know how that happened, but somehow the owner said to me, "You need to find a new career. This one's not for you."
Brian,
I own a chain of restaurants today, by the way. And that guy came back and looking for a job 20 years later, which is funny. But
did he get the job?
No, he didn't.
Oh, man, he's holding a grudge.
20-year grudge. You fired me. So did that for a while. It did well. I started a landscaping business. It did really well until it didn't. One of my favorite things. Learned a lot of lessons in that big failure. Went on, did an insurance company, sold it to a venture capital firm. Did another insurance company, sold it to another venture capital firm. Did an online marketing company, sold it to a private equity firm. Went into consulting and doing sales and management consulting to Fortune 500. It's amazing for a guy that failed out of high school and was mowing grass 5 years earlier, and now I'm standing in boardrooms telling CEOs how to run their companies, only because I had sold a couple of companies of venture capital, and everybody thinks you're smart when you do that. I wasn't any smarter than I was 5 years before that, by the way. Kept going, did consulting, wrote several books. Two of them were Wall Street Journal bestsellers. Got into politics. I serve on city council in my hometown. And I run a mastermind coaching program now for entrepreneurs in the 1 to 10 million range. That's my 2 minutes.
Whoa,
spiel.
Gino, I thought you said this guy was safe. We don't typically bring politicians on here, all right?
Exactly.
All right, we'll give you a pass. All right.
It's nonpartisan, man. We're nonpartisan.
Brian, in the book, you talked about your first aha moment. Can you share with us your first aha moment?
The first aha moment? I don't know. There's probably several in there. Which one are you talking about?
I think it was the diamond landscape. I mean, I could see you and Jake hanging out, driving that tractor. That's what Jake likes to do. I'm the guy. I'm going to cut this. A nice big red-ass tractor.
Oh, that aha moment. Got it. Okay. Yes. So here I am. I'm 20 years old, and I just gotten married. I didn't have a car. I didn't have any place to live. So I was living with my grandma. I didn't have a job. I was really a winner, by the way. I'm not sure why my wife married me at the time. And I went to work for this landscaping company making $4 an hour. And after about 2 weeks, I remember I was sitting in the truck, and we had this book, and it had all the lawns we were mowing. And I added up all the amount of money we were collecting every day. And it was $2,000 a week. And I know I was making $4 an hour. So that was 160. The guy beside me was making 200, and the other guy was making four. I figured our gas and fuel. And I'm thinking, you know, we cost about $1,000 a week. We're pulling in two. And every day at the end of the day, we drive over to the owner's house. We pull up his driveway and we hand him a bunch of cash. He's been sitting in the air conditioning all day while we're out busting our ass. One of us is stupid. And I knew which one it was. It was a guy making $160 a week. So having no idea what I was doing, I quit my job at $4 an hour, bought a mower, a weed eater, and a blower, and started my first business. And that's how I did it. I started driving around, sticking things in people's mailboxes until the Postmaster General emailed me and sent me a nice letter. Says you can't do that. And we went on, oh, and I built seven franchises out of that company.
Postmaster loser.
Postmaster General.
The important thing on that is, let's talk about the self-employed versus the business owner. Because I think when you first started out your own business, you were the self-employed. Yes. Whereas the person that was running those different delivery, those different routes, he was a business owner. Let's share that. That I think that's another aha moment for yourself, because there's a lot of technicians out there. We're going to go through the four personalities because that's truly important for everybody to hear. But discuss that, what your thoughts on self-employed versus business owner are.
So the first thing I always tell everybody is, if you're going to be in business, you're either going to be self-employed, which means it's just you, or you're going to own a business that you can build intrinsic value in, something that you have a team and you have systems and processes. A business is something that you can walk away from and sell. Self-employment is not, right? So there's a difference there. And it doesn't make any difference which one you want to be, whether you want to be self-employed or whether you want to own a business, but you need to make that decision, right? If you make the decision that you're going to be a business owner, then you need to start building an actual business, right? And that means you need to start replacing yourself in everything you do in your company. You need to start building those processes and procedures so that you can take a vacation or go away, or for God's sakes, put down your dang cell phone, right? Stop answering it. That's what a business owner does. So the difference between those two, self-employed, someday you're going to walk away from that business and get nothing. You build a business, someday you can walk away and sell that thing and make a bunch of money, which I've done many, many times.
But Brian, shouldn't every business owner at least think of an exit strategy? Most of them don't. We're in real estate. So when we buy a multifamily property, you don't make money in real estate when you buy. I think that's a fallacy. You actually make money in real estate when you exit, whether it's a sale or a refi. You do make cash flow, you know, monthly and yearly, and it can typically add up. But Jake and I see our big equity gains when we're refinancing properties and actually holding on to them, getting these nice loans that are pretty much tax-free to us. Shouldn't business owners be thinking about that exit as they're starting their business?
If they have decided that they want to build a business and not be self-employed, yes, they need to start from the beginning to build a business that will allow them to walk away from it. Because there are different things you do in business if you're going to build something you can sell.
Guys, we're assuming that they're consciously making a decision or understand the difference. That's the problem. Many times they're just trying to make some money. Brian, starting the lawn care company, had no conscious reality that he could be a business owner or be self-employed. You just saw the $2,000 and said, let me get some of that. So true. I think that's the first step is having awareness of what the situation really is. And I think this is a great topic for this podcast, because you're probably shedding some light and shining some light on areas for folks that may not even realize exist.
Well, a lot of people say, well, I own a business. And I say, no, you don't. You're self-employed. You've created a job for yourself. And that's not bad. And I don't want people to think that's bad. If that's what you want, then that's good. But if you want the other, then you need to do different things. Each comes with positives and negatives. If you're self-employed, I have 150 employees today. I've been sued three times in the last 2 years. My insurance company's had to settle for people I've never met who had issues with my company that I didn't even know about. So these are the challenges, some of the challenges you have with owning a business that you don't have in self-employed. If you don't want to hire people, if you don't want to deal with it, if you want to build things, if you don't want to take big risks, if you don't sign personal guarantees, if you don't want to take big loans, just be self-employed. Just understand that there's a limit to what you can do in that type of business. If you want to build something big, make that decision and then go do it. And you're right, Jake. When I started, I had no clue. All this is stuff you learn. As we say, you connect the dots going backwards. You can never connect them going forwards. So stuff I've learned, and I'm more than happy to teach people. I do it today, but they need to make that first decision.
I would say to anyone listening, if you want to build a legacy or you want to leave something, being self-employed is great. It's for yourself. But then all of a sudden when you're ready to retire, that business goes goodbye. And like, you have hundreds of customers, but there's no systems. You can't transfer that to somebody else. So think of that. If you're in that process right now, and for those of you that are buying multifamily, we say, Jake and Gino, we create multifamily entrepreneurs. We want our, you know, students to be going in there and buying one, two, three deals. After your third deal, all of a sudden the game changes. You've got 70, 80 units. Now you have to start hiring property managers or third-party property management. You have to start implementing systems. So multifamily real estate is built for what Brian's talking about. You start out, all of us start out as self-employed, but those of us that stay in the long game and build something with legacy, with true generational wealth, are the ones who transition into business owners.
100%. So, yep, 100%.
You know, talk about the four personalities, because I think that's important for everybody to understand where they land. It's the entrepreneur, the manager, the salesperson, and what we just talked about, the specialist, the person who's a specialist, the Joe Plumber going out there. Yeah, Brian's making a ton of money. I'm going to make some money myself, buy myself a truck, get some tools, go out there and get a few customers.
So the first challenge I find with young entrepreneurs is they don't know who they are in the business. It's one of the five keys to success I talk about. In fact, I just wrote this article for Forbes. One of the five keys to success is figuring out who you are in the business, and more importantly, who you're not in the business. And I always use Joe the plumber as an example. If you're Joe the plumber and you've been running a plumbing company or working for a plumbing company for 10 years, and you decide to start a business, Joe's Plumbing, you are the technician. You're the guy doing the plumbing. You're probably not a good business guy at this point. You might not be a good salesperson at this point, and you're probably a terrible manager. So when we look at a successful business, we look at the different parts of that company and what roles need to be filled in order for you to be able to grow and scale, right? One of them is you got to have the technician, which is what most people start businesses as. They're the person that does the actual work. They're the CPA or the plumber or the landscaper or whatever it is they technically do. You also have to have a manager. A manager is a person who sits in the office and manages the paperwork, and they know when the insurance is due and where to hang the posters on the wall and how you're going to handle the unemployment tax and you're going to do payroll. That's a manager. Okay. That's a person that's going to get into the details of what you do every day. Then you've got the salesperson, right? This is a person who eats what they kill. This is a person who goes out and makes shit happen. They're the ones that they make it rain. They pull the jobs in so the technician has something to go out and do and generate revenue. And then there's the entrepreneur. And the entrepreneur is the sexy one, right? And that's what everybody thinks they are. Everybody thinks, well, I'm an entrepreneur. Or what's worse is they think they're a CEO when they're not. I just had a conversation with a guy raising money 2 weeks ago in St. Pete. And he said, I'm the CEO and I'm raising money. I said, have you ever raised money? He said, no. I said, well, then you probably don't know how to raise money. I said, who's the CEO of your company? He said, me. I said, well, you're asking me if I'm willing to invest. Are you willing to step down as CEO? And he said, no. I said, why not? He said, because I'm a good CEO. I can learn how to do that.
It looks cool on his business card too. Let's be honest, Brian.
Yeah. Entrepreneurs are not necessarily CEOs. Entrepreneurs are terrible managers for the most part, right? Managers are managers. Managers, they manage things. So figure out who you are. If you're the technician, then hire a manager and hire a CEO and hire a salesperson. If you're a salesperson, hire the technician and hire a manager. Managers and salespeople, by the way, tend to clash a lot. I talk about that in the book. But figure out who you are in the business and who you're not, and then backfill where you need to bring help in. And that is a key to building a lasting business. You'd be surprised how many young entrepreneurs, their business is failing because they either think they're everything or they think they're something they're not. And they need to go back to doing what they do best and find somebody else to do what they're not good at.
But then you have the shaper. Did you know I was going there, Gino, or no? No, okay. He's like, and I've heard this so many times from this guy. No, my favorite is, so Ray Dalio classifies himself as a shaper. He classifies Steve Jobs as a shaper. It's the visionary plus the critical thinking. It's the visionary plus the ability to manage the business. It's you know, to your point, having the investment management along with the business management. It's pretty interesting. I always found that from his book, Principles, is one of the very cool identifiers that he uses. And there's probably very few folks that can actually do both. And clearly your CEO is probably not one of them at this point. Maybe someday, right? But
maybe someday.
Not yet. Yeah.
You know, I find entrepreneurs can be salesperson because an entrepreneur can sell a dream. They can sell a concept. They can sell an idea. They're generally good at that. But they can't be managers because entrepreneurs tend to think in bullet points. They're at 30,000 feet. They're ADHD like me a lot of times, and their head's all over the place. It gives them the ability to manage a lot of different areas at one time, but it's a challenge to focus on, you know, getting down and writing all the details and managing all the little fine numbers. So everybody's got their strengths and weaknesses. And being one, it doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you need to backfill. I freely admit I'm a terrible manager.
In The Dropout Millionaire, holding up the book for all of you on YouTube, great book, by the way, you share a story about that. And can you share with us when you're starting your online insurance business and you're out there selling it, and all of a sudden I think a manager went out and tried to sell it and your friend's like, bro, they are tanking. You got to get your ass out here, get in a plane and save it. Because everyone thinks they're a salesperson and everyone thinks, and I want you to really highlight that to all the entrepreneurs out here, because you can get rid of everybody in management and still survive for a while. Yep. But if you get rid of everybody in sales, there's no money coming in to fund the deal, if there's no deal dogs out there finding the deals, your business is basically over. Can you go over that? Because that's really, really important.
So I was bought out by a venture capital company and we were a retail operation. They bought me out and immediately told me that, thank you, we bought your company, it's awesome, but you're no longer qualified to run it. So we're going to bring a young, sharp MBA to be your boss and you're going to be a manager for your business. Okay, fine, whatever. You're paying me a lot of money, I'll do this. Well, then we decided to build this direct-to-consumer online enrollment platform for the insurance industry. So we developed the platform. The CEO of the company said, I will not support you. You get no staff, no money, but if you can sell it to somebody, knock yourself out. So me and the CTO, we run out. We talked to several insurance companies, including two of the biggest in the country. And we'd already sold our first one. We'd made like $2 million in SaaS-type revenue on the first deal within 6 weeks. And everybody's eyes perked up like, oh, we might have something here. So then we set up another appointment with a group out of California, largest insurance company in the country. And since we had sold the first one, everybody decided that they were really interested in this new division, right? So they told me that you no longer need to be the salesperson for this new division that you created. We're going to bring in the young, sharp MBA, who's our head of business development and our VP of sales, and they're going to do it. So you can stay home. So I stayed home. The whole team flies to California. The first night, my CTO calls me. He says, get on a plane right now and you need to come out here. And I'm like, what's up? He said, get on a plane. I'll fill you in when you get to California. I jump on a plane. I fly to California. I meet him. I said, Mark, what's up? He goes, they are bombing. I'm like, what? He goes, they don't know how to sell. Too many people think they know how to sell because they think sales is repeating information and giving statistics and data. And that has nothing to do with sales. Absolutely nothing. It's a good backup and you need to have that, but that's not how you sell. So to the point, I walked into this room the next morning and there were about 20 people sitting at this big long table and they all had their arms crossed and they were scowling thinking, why are we here another day? This is a waste of time. These guys, this, they're a young startup.
How long are you pitching these poor bastards for? Holy crap.
Well, they had them for a day and my CTO says, you know, we have a technical problem. Can we start again tomorrow? And they all agreed. So that's how I admit.
Lucky they agreed to it.
So I remember walking in. I got my whole team on one wall, their team in front of me and a PowerPoint behind me. And I looked at this room and I thought, oh my God, these guys don't want to hear me start talking about a bunch of nonsense again. This is not going to work. They're already in a negative defensive mode, right? We call this the defensive mode of mistrust. And so I literally grabbed a chair and I walked over and I just sat down at the table with the group from this insurance company. And I just sat there and I said, I'm not going to sell you guys anything. I'm not here to pitch it. I just want to talk to you for a few minutes. And my team's over there on the wall and they're freaking out. They're like, what the hell's he doing? The PowerPoint's behind him. And I just started talking to him about what's going on. I said, look, you guys sell insurance. I spent 10 years selling insurance. This is what I do. I was one of the biggest producers in the world, or in the country, not the world, the country, before I got bought out by this venture capital firm. I can tell you what's wrong with your platform. And you already know it. So let's chat about it. An hour later, that entire table, they were eating in my hand. They were ready to buy. We walked out of there with $6 million worth of sale, a purchase order for $6 million worth of software. It's about sales, man. And sales is a talent, by the way. It's a talent and it's a skill and there are different levels of it. And you can learn to get better, but it's like a professional athlete. I always say, you know, I'm getting off topic here, but there are how many colleges out there? 500, and they've all got great quarterbacks, but how many of them make it to the NFL? And the ones that make it to the NFL, how many of them become Peyton Manning and Tom Brady?
And the other ones that don't sell insurance.
Yeah. So sales is definitely a key and it's not just about reading a PowerPoint and regurgitating stuff. You got to read people. How do I get off on that?
It's not what you say, it's how you make them feel. That really hit hard on me at one point. And people are always talking about features and benefits. It's about emotions. I think you have to, you know, sell them with emotion, close them with logic. I think it's the emotional component that most managers don't understand. And the salesmen sometimes, or saleswomen sometimes, are so emotional that they don't get the logical aspect of the business. And that's probably why both of them end up clashing so much.
I love this example. Let me give this example. When you go to buy a car, when you walk on the car lot, do they hand you the manual to the car and ask you to read it before you get in the car? No, they say, what color do you want? Do you want automatic or standard? Let's take it for a test drive. I want you to fall in love with this thing. Nobody cares what's in the manual. Nobody wants to talk to the finance department, get a 32-page contract. We want you to fall in love. And that's what sales is about.
Mm-hmm. This question is for Jake, because I know Jake's going to light up when I ask you this question. Negotiation. Jake likes negotiation, and you've got some negotiation tips, and it seems like you've had 35 years worth of it. So anything out there that people should be working on when they're negotiating, whether they're going out to dinner, whether they're negotiating a contract, negotiating a sale of a business, buying a business.
The question's for you, Brian. He just said, I like it.
Oh, I thought the question was for Jake. Sorry.
The way he said it, I would too, but I know him well enough to realize.
I'm sorry.
Volley to Brian. I'll take the question, but it would be kind of weird. So, Brian, it's all you.
I was like, all right, I'm just waiting for Jake to talk here.
We just work here.
Negotiation is about asking questions. That is all it is about. The sales is about asking questions. Negotiation is about asking questions. Negotiation and sales is about, I love this one, it's about overcoming objections, but it's about overcoming those objections before the client/customer has them. Because whatever it is you're selling, you probably already know what the primary objections are you're getting every time, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to build a well-scripted thing to say in your head to learn how to overcome those objections prior to the customer having them. And you do that by asking questions. If you ask the right questions, customers will tell you everything you want to know. They'll tell you all about them, why they're buying, when they're buying, why they're looking, why they didn't shop someplace else, if they did, why they didn't buy. And if you script them right, you can get them to talk themselves right into buying your product. But too many salespeople just want to talk, and they want to talk about their product, and they want to talk about all the benefits, as you said a second ago, and that's really not what it's about, right? Mm. Ask the right questions. And then when you get into a negotiation with somebody, and I steal stuff from everybody, right? I stole this from Richard Branson. If your first offer doesn't insult them, you've offered too much, is one of his favorite sayings, which I love. But you should always have a range of options available to you that they have already chosen within the range. This is pretty technical, before you ever pitch your product, right? That I might have lost some people on that one. But the example I always use is, look, if you're selling products and you have products from $500 to $1,000, the first question I'll ask people is, hey, man, I got products that range from $500 to $1,000. Where are you comfortable with in that range? You want me to start at the $500 level? Do you want me to start at the $1,000? And let them tell you where to start, and then that's what we'll start talking about. But I've always got another option to go back to if I need it.
I like that. Same side selling. Ian Altman teaches that, and it's really good because you're trying to find impact with the person on the other side, and you're not trying to sell what you want to sell them. You're trying to listen to what their problems are, and you're trying to fit your solution to what their needs are. They may want the low-end product, but they may want that white glove service where they're like, yeah, I'll go for the $1,000.
Yeah.
But you don't make that assumption. I love that. Last question from me. There's so many lessons in the Dropout Millionaire. I think the first one is the most appropriate because a young, Brian sitting on a tractor, it says, be careful what you allow your brain to get into your brain. And if you're a young 20-year-old and somebody's out there saying to you, hey, Brian, you're never going to get into business. You're never going to do this. There's no way. And you'd listen to them, you wouldn't be on this podcast 35 years later selling multiple businesses. Are there any lessons in this book that stand out to you that say, hey, I'd love to share them with the listeners?
So remember, I failed out of high school. No discernible education of any kind, no job skills of any kind. And the reason I got here today is because what I tell people, the difference between you now and you 5 years from now is going to be the people you associate with, the books you read, and today, the podcasts you listen to. You've got to immerse and overwhelm your brain with positive business, learning, skills, sales, that type of stuff if you want to move up in the world, right? I also like to say you are who you are, and who you are got you where you are. And if you want to go someplace different, then you're going to need to change who you are. Because if who you are could have already gotten there, you would have already done it. So recognize that who you are isn't going to get you where you want to go. Check your ego and start educating yourself. Books, association with people, podcasts, put the right information in your brain, because your brain has this filter in there that accepts and rejects information based on its entire history from the moment you were born. Everything that's ever gone in your head creates this filter of accept and reject. And if you've ever known somebody who they everything they touch turns to gold, and if you've ever known somebody that everything they do seems to fail, it's because of the filter in their head. It's because they accept and reject information incorrectly to allow them to achieve. We say the only difference between me and you and Elon Musk is the way we think. That's the only difference. So if you want to be who they are and have what they have, then you need to think like they think. And that's a product of educating yourself and putting better information in your head. That's a long subject, but that's the short of it.
Jake, before we go to the short answers, I think what Brian's really saying, and rip it down in a few words, is to be responsible for your actions. If you're responsible for where you are right now, you can say to yourself, oh, I want to create a different plan. And it's really a paradigm. It's a way of the way of how you've looked at things up till now. And if you don't look back at your life 10 years ago and say to yourself, I can't believe I thought those things 10 years ago, then you're just not growing. That's the unfortunate thing. Jake and I, 10 years ago, bought our first property. I could even, if I look back then now, I'm like, wow, I really didn't know that much back then. I've learned a lot more. So I think everyone out there, just be responsible for where you are. There's nothing wrong for where you are. You are where you need to be to where you need to go. I think that's ultimately what Brian's saying. Be responsible for those actions. Yeah, as T. Harv Eker says, your fruits are in your roots. You need to expand those roots, grow those roots stronger. And then, you know, eventually those fruits will come out to fruition.
Yep. Success is a progression. It's a progression of ideas, thoughts, and executions. Just like you said, you started 10 years ago. Today, you're 10 times better because you've progressed. You've learned. You've educated yourself. And today, you think differently than you did then. It's a progression.
Gino heard responsibility. If you're driving right now, ask yourself, what did you hear? I heard home. And then I saw Yoda and heard Jedi stuff. It's all different. You know, it's perception. It's how it's coming through. It's how you take this stuff in and then what comes out the other side. That's all I'm saying. We're going to take a quick time out here from a sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino Community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Build Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey multifamily.
All right, we are back. Talking about scaling a little bit earlier, talking about how you went and started with the lawnmower and then and grew from there. And before the show, we were speaking and you're saying, I really don't do anything and I delegate and disappear. So when you first started to realize, hey, I'm going to become a solopreneur, that didn't last long, obviously. What was your first step to start scaling and removing yourself from the business? Because I think that's we're talking about awareness. That's the issue that people have. They don't have the awareness, so they may get stuck. So where did you go in your journey?
It's a progression, Jake. And I'm telling you, it's a progression that some people don't even know they're in, right? And so the quick story, I'll give you my insurance story, right? I start selling insurance. And back then we had to meet face to face and I had to drive to your house and get a wet signature and a physical copy of a check. And I was running these Yellow Page ads. Well, every time I'd go to visit somebody, my phone was ringing and nobody was answering it. And then I'd get out to the house and 50% of the time they weren't there. And I was getting frustrated thinking, well, this is dumb. I'm wasting half of my time driving around town. And by the way, my phone's ringing and nobody's answering the phone. So I need to get somebody to answer the phone. I know this seems like a very simple thought process, but it was a progression. Now I got somebody answering the phone and taking appointments. Well, then one day I was like, why am I driving around trying to sell people insurance at their house? Why don't I just sell them over the phone? And that way I'll know if they're sold before I ever drive out there. So I started selling over the phone, which had really never been done. And then when I would go out, I would get 75% of my people showing up to actually sign the paperwork and give me the check. Well, this went on for a few months. And then one day I said, you know, if I could get somebody else to drive out there, then I wouldn't have to drive out there. And I could stay home and answer the phone and sell over the phone and just have them drive around. And so I hired a guy named Andy. And Andy would drive around picking up insurance applications. Well, after a few more months of this, I said, you know, if I could fire Andy, I could make more money. And so I thought, why can't I do this over fax? I mean, it's never been done. So I cut a deal with an insurance carrier. The next thing you were doing fax applications. And I became the second largest agency in the country. And then after a while, I said, well, if I can do this over fax, why can't I hire more people to do this? And so I hired a few more people. And then I said, if I've got all these people, why am I working? So I stopped taking calls myself. And I sat in my office and let other people do it. And what we did is we progressed and built the first direct-to-consumer call center. And in 1999, when the internet boom happened, boom, we got snatched up by a venture capital firm. Not because I started out thinking that that's what I was going to do. I just progressed in my idea. I call this ambitiously lazy, by the way. I'm willing to work really hard to not have to work. And so if I can continue to replace myself in what I do, then eventually I can do less and less and the business will continue. And that wasn't something that I thought I was doing when I did it. It was something that I learned as a progression. And then after that, I started going, holy crap, I can do this with every company that I build from now on. Let me just build these progressions and replace myself so that I don't have to actually work. I have restaurants I don't know how to cook. I have restaurants I've never been to. It's not true I've been to them, but I don't ever go to them. So
food's not that good.
Now I understand because I've progressed to the point that I understand how to build a business that doesn't require me to be there.
Clueless tenacity.
So yes. A great place for folks to start. Look at your calendar today. What are you doing? What could be done by someone else? How could you replace yourself and start there until you have no jobs left? Or maybe you people, just do podcasts like Brian.
Are you willing to earn less money today so that you can earn more money later, right? If I'm willing to pay somebody to do this job, then I can take my talents and build the business bigger. And when the business is bigger, then I can replace myself again. It'll cost me money today, but then I can build the business bigger. And you keep doing this over and over until you have a business that, you know, a venture capital company wants to buy or a private equity company wants to buy. And that's what we did over and over.
That's challenging.
Confession from a recovering solopreneur, Gino. The biggest mistake we made was we didn't hire fast enough or quick enough, early on enough, whatever you want to say. It took us too long. That was definitely our biggest mistake. Sorry, we were
and that's a challenge, Jake, because a lot of people fear loss. They fear that loss of that paycheck, and they're really simply self-employed. So maybe there's some soul searching and see what's going on. You know, hey, how did your mom and dad treat you? How did they talk about money when you were growing up? Hey, was it scarcity and you have to keep every single dollar and everyone's out there trying to rip you off? And I figure if Sam Walton thought about that, we wouldn't have thousands of Walmarts right now.
It's also about people wanting to live at their lifestyle or above, which keeps them from being able to do that. Because if I replace myself and take an income hit, I can't pay the bills. Well, maybe your lifestyle is too big right now. Mm-hmm. Back it down. Look at the long run. Look at the future. You don't need to have a boat today. Maybe you can get a boat in 3 years, take the boat money and hire somebody to do the job so you can get a bigger boat in 3 years. So this is all about mindset.
Besides replacing yourself whenever possible, what is your best habit for success?
You need to understand the numbers in your business. You would, maybe you wouldn't, but I was surprised when I started doing consulting and coaching, how many business owners have no idea what's going on in their business. My first question when I ever talk to somebody is, I need 24 months worth of P&Ls broken down month by month so we can do a pattern recognition on your P&L, right? Well, I don't keep that. Well, how do you know if you're making money? Well, because I got money in the checkbook. You'd be surprised how many people say that, right? I had a lady say, well, I paid all my credit cards off. I said, ma'am, you didn't pay your rent last month, right? They have no idea. So you need to have a firm understanding of the numbers in your business. And if you're not good at the math, hire somebody who is. In my case, I break all of our P&Ls down into six metrics. There are six metrics. I call them the core metrics. And I know if those metrics are within a percentage point or two of what they're supposed to be, my business is profitable. If one of those core metrics gets off on a percentage basis, I know that's where I should focus on my business. I don't need to understand every number. I need to understand the core metrics. Somebody else, I have an accounting team that manages the numbers, but show me the core metrics. I'll know if they're on or off, and then that's where we focus our time. That's so important in business.
Any books that you've read in the last few years that added value to your life that you want to share with folks?
I'll tell you my favorite three books. And if you read my books, you're going to see smatterings of all of these books and what I write, right? So number one was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I think that's an amazing book, right? Especially for young entrepreneurs. Number two is The E-Myth. And The E-Myth talks a lot about those four personalities that I talked about in my book. We just kind of, you know, moved them around and changed them a little bit. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad, The E-Myth. And the last one is Blink. And Blink is the genesis of what I call my personal filter, which is chapter one in that book you've got there, Gino. And it talks about how we make decisions and why we make decisions and how those decisions affect us. And if we want to change, how we need to change the way we make decisions, right? If everything you do is based on that subconscious, I'm not thinking about it, and you're not going where you need to go, then you need to start making conscious decisions to override that to make better decisions.
Put your ass where your heart wants to be, Gino. Who said that?
I don't know, but I'll give you, I'll buy you a Chick-fil-A milkshake if you know the author of Blink. Come on, give me the author.
Daniel Pink?
No.
Pretty close. Come on, give me one more.
Gino Barbaro?
I wish, bro. Malcolm Gladwell, great book. I'm actually in the process of reading the book right now. So those are three great books. Thanks for sharing those.
You got to put your ass where your heart wants to be. Come on. He wrote Bagger Vance.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Stephen Pressfield.
There you
yes.
go. It's similar like to what Mr. he was saying Pressfield. On Blink there. I think Malcolm Gladwell ripped off not Blink, as that says, but from Pressfield.
I think everybody rips everybody off. Come on now.
Yes. Rip off and duplicate, my friend. That's right. R&D.
So just mix it all up in a bowl and hey, boom, you got a new book.
Well, not for nothing. Think and Grow Rich, I think, you know, basically every book since then has been a chapter on that, you know. So anyways.
Yeah, I probably read that the first time 40 years ago. That's a great book.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about the new book, Brian.
The new book is called No, The Psychology of Sales and Negotiation, and it's 40 Lessons in Negotiation from a Street Smart Negotiator. And I wrote that book because, again, so many people, and I've got a bunch of stories in there. Everything I do is about stories. And there are different levels of salespeople. I call them retail geese. I call them salespeople. And I call them closers. And there's stories about that retail geese in there. But it's really for people who want to get good at sales and really don't know how to do it. And I like to say in the book, it's not about cheesy sales lines. I hate that. It's not about slamming. I hate that. It's not hardcore closing. It's not about manipulating people into doing things they don't want to do, because those sales never stick. There is literal human nature that you need to understand. There's psychology behind everything you say and everything you do that will help you become a much, much better closer. As I like to say, I can make you better. All you need to do is listen and learn, right? Can I give you one? The very first objection. I call this the first, every single salesperson in every single situation has this objection. People don't like salespeople, right? So, and it's not that they don't like you. You could be a great guy. You could coach Little League and you have parties at your house. But when you put on your salesperson hat, people don't trust you anymore because they don't think you're looking out for their best interests. And if they don't trust you and they don't think you're looking out for their best interests, they don't like you, right? And so if we know that's the first objection to every single sales situation, then you need to figure out how to overcome that. It's not that people don't like you. It's that they are afraid of you. They are afraid of being sold something they don't want or something that's overpriced. And they're afraid of the unknown. They don't know what you're going to do next. They don't know if you have some magic voodoo cheesy sales line that's going to trick them. So if they're afraid of the unknown and they're afraid of being sold, how do you overcome that? And that's what the first part of the book is about, is overcoming that first objection. If you can do that, you take down their defensive wall of mistrust and the sales process will go much smoother.
You sit down and you pour out a round of margaritas. You know,
that'll do it too.
California, and you just get them loose.
Well, it's funny. One of the things I say is that if you're a salesperson, you need to be talking like you're with your buddy at the bar, right? Don't too many salespeople when they start talking, their voice goes up an octave, and they start talking too fast, and they want to
talk. Asshole puckers up, and they get like,
yeah, it's like you're an instant salesperson, and nobody likes that.
Yeah. It's called commission breath. That's what it's called, really. Yeah. All of a sudden, they just see the sale, and they don't care if that product is actually helping the person. Yeah. They just see the commission rolling in. Yes.
Where can we get the book, Brian? You got a website? Is it on Amazon, I'm guessing?
Yeah, www.brianwillmedia.com. My podcast, my books, my speaking stuff, my mastermind, my coach, everything's on that website, brianwillmedia.com. And yeah, they're both on Amazon.
Nice.
They're all three of them. I got three books out there.
Gino, step up to the plate, Malcolm Gladwell.
You give me a minute because Brian's got a long story. So I'm going to try to recap his long story because at 16 years of age, it seemed like he actually failed out of high school. Ended up getting, I guess, a GED. He got a 1.2 GPA. I think I got a little bit higher than that. So I'm proud of that. He went to the Navy at the age of 18. He left the Navy at 20 years old. He's living in his grandma's basement with a new wife. Going out there cutting lawns. What's the name of the company again? The name of the company is Diamond Landscape. I can see him on that tractor right now, man, making $240 a week, making $4 an hour. And from there starts his first business. And that first business goes, sold several franchises through that business, goes through the 90s, gets into what I call some really cool businesses because they're really proprietary. They were state of the art, something that wasn't done before. And I love the fact that his ego did not get in the way of saying, why are these guys going out there pitching my product when I got no support, I got no backup, I made you $2 million, you didn't trust me, you send the manager out there who can't close the deal, then you call me up, and I'm out there, and within 24 hours, I got $6 million of product. But it didn't stop him. It's that clueless tenacity that continues to progress and progress. And through the 90s, sells his companies, and through the 2000s. And I mean, over the last 35 years, he's not only built businesses. A guy with a 1.2 GPA has written some best-selling books on the Wall Street Journal. That's pretty amazing as well. So I mean, 35 years. And I would start with this one. This is an amazing book. And then the negotiation book, the No, get that one next, everyone.
Gino, I appreciate that. That's awesome. And by the way, it was Army and Air Force. I don't want to
sorry,
misstate the Navy there. The Navy guys might be like, hey,
We were looking for a Top Gun.
Four years Army, 4 years Air Force.
Wow. Okay.
Very cool.
Dude, 8 years.
All right, gang. Yeah. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.